Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. Carrington Harrison here. My guy Brandon Kiley on the ones and twos producing this thing. Taking you up until 6 o'clock. We have full shows Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Now Friday, there's a little basketball game you guys may have heard of. K-State. They play in the first round of the NCAA tournament. I have no clue what that like because my team is not playing in the NCAA tournament or the NIT tournament or the CBI tournament. My team is 100% done. So now I am cheering on the Eco Cats to cut down the nets and be in Minneapolis for the Final Four. Thanks so much for listening. We have a lot to get into. Bill Self emphatically put down the NBA rumors. Earl Thomas is the one that got away for the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll get more in depth into that. We'll also take a minute. Plus, I know you guys will find this very difficult to believe, but executing the unveiling of the bracket has been extremely difficult for CBS. You have a really cool product, and for some reason they had to put the teams in alphabetical order. One year the bracket show was supposed to be 2.5 hours long, and then it got leaked on Twitter, so they had to speed it up and do it in 45 minutes. For some weird reason, CBS has completely botched the tournament unveiling over the last couple years. But they have finally got it right. I mean, I know, a $1 billion company in CBS. It took them time after time, but they finally got together the unveiling of the NCAA bracket. Again, thanks for listening. Carrington here, Kiley here, taking you up until 6 o'clock. We got a lot of stuff to get into. We'll talk about the NCAA tournament coming up in just a little bit. But I still think the Kansas City Chiefs are the top story in Kansas City. Let's be honest here. There's not a lot of buzz around the Kansas Jayhawks right now. There is some buzz around the Kansas State Wildcats, but they shipped them all the way off to San Jose. So we'll talk about them, and they play on Friday. But the Chiefs made a signing today, Bashaud Breeland. Now, I'm a little disappointed he couldn't just sign last year. You know, when I was reporting on him signing, I can't believe he would do me this way, but doesn't matter at this point. He ended up signing. He's a member of the Kansas City Chiefs. And we've talked a lot over the last 3, 4, 5 days about the Chiefs' defensive plan, what they are trying to do. I think the plan is starting to come in focus. So I wrote down these four things. This is what I think the Chiefs' plan is defensively right now, at least when it comes to free agency, because part of the plan is paying Chris Jones. They haven't done that yet, but no reason not to think they're not going to take care of Chris Jones financially and that that issue is going to be resolved sooner rather than later. I think step one of the Chiefs' defensive plan was finding a new leader on defense. I think that the Chiefs felt like they needed an emotional, a physical leader, and someone that they could go out there and call their best player. Now, you might argue if Chris Jones is their best player, and I wouldn't fault you when it comes to that. But I think it is clear, based on the energy given to him, I think from the organization, based on how I think the other guys in the locker room are going to respond to Tyrann Mathieu, based on how Brett Veach talked about him, and I'll play it for you here in just a little bit, I think it is very clear that Tyrann Mathieu is the leader of the Chiefs defense. Here's what Veach had to say in his press conference last week.
The one thing that we said, you know, you can acquire as many great players and as many talented players as you like, but until you have the catalyst to make it go, things will never work out the way you want them. And this was the catalyst that we had to have.
So I think the Chiefs looked at the top end of what they have. And I think they were evaluating Eric Berry, and we'll get to him in a little bit and how he factors into the plan. I think you look at Justin Houston. I think you look at the other good players that they have on their team, and it's clear that they wanted to breathe a little bit of fresh air and newness into this defense, that it was going to be hard to go into next season with a couple of different pieces and not making radical changes. And I think the fan expectation is we just need you to be 19th and 20th. I think it's kind of clear that Veach is thinking much bigger than that, that you don't go out there and you're not trying to pick up Tyrann Mathieu and Earl Thomas to just finish 21st in defense and just be good enough. I think they are trying a complete overhaul on the fly of the defense, but also trying to build or also trying to think a little bit forward thinking and think a little bit into the future. I also think part of the plan was we can't do this season with Eric Berry. I think that Eric Berry is going to play this season. I don't know if he's going to play 16 games. I don't know if he's going to play 12 games. I don't know if he's going to play 8 games. I do feel pretty confident to say he is going to play more games than he played a season ago for the Kansas City Chiefs. It'd be hard to play fewer games than what he did a couple or last year for the Kansas City Chiefs. I think they, when they made their checklists and they were on the whiteboard and they were writing things down, I think they said, we have to go in another direction and we cannot let this cloud continue to hang over our team. That even if Eric Berry got hurt for something completely separately as opposed to the Achilles, it was going to be another day-to-day. You never know how you feel. That I think in the same way that they're trying to start over with the defense, part of it was they had to hand the baton over from Eric Berry to Tyrann Mathieu. That the vocal leader and the kind of physical and emotional leader that I think Berry was going to be, they had to give that to somebody else, and they were not going to have two guys vying for that attention. And I think that person ended up being Tyrann Mathieu. I think another part and how it factors in today is, I think they needed to go get themselves a veteran corner. I like Kendall Fuller. He can't be your senior cornerback on a team. I don't think he can. I don't think he's a good number one corner. Now, you might argue that neither is Bashaud Breeland, that he's not a number one corner. But I think at least on the other side, you needed a little bit more experience, a little bit more seasoning, and someone who has played the position a lot longer than Charvarius Ward and Tremont Smith. I like Charvarius Ward. Given what you gave up for Charvarius Ward and what we've seen so far in the expectation, I think it's pretty safe to say that you've already won that trade. Charvarius Ward looks like somebody who can be a staple of your defense. He has less than 5 starts. You look at Tremont Smith, 6th-round draft pick. I think very good corner, at least for what you spent and the resources that you have put into him. He has 4 career tackles in his NFL career. The same way that last year they needed to go get David Amerson, even though it didn't work, even though the same logic they imply when they went to go get Orlando Scandrick, who worked for the first 8 games of the season but didn't work the second half of it, they needed to go get somebody like Bashaud Breeland. You sign him on a 1-year, very heavy incentive-laden contract where it's a 1-year, 3, 1-year, $5 million deal. So there's incentive for him to go out there and play well. It's incentive for him to be healthy. It's incentive for him to try to help you accomplish all your goals. And then if you bring him back, cool. But if not, he goes on and gets his big-time payday. If we're looking at the market right now for free agents, it's not a great market. Darby signed a 1-year deal. Bradley Roby signed a 1-year deal. Bashaud Breeland signed a 1-year deal. Tell me where these big-time cornerback deals are. That I think this year, it was clearly the year of the safety. Your safeties were getting paid. Earl Thomas got paid. Tyrann Mathieu got paid. Landon Collins got paid. LaMarcus Joyner got paid. Adrian Amos got paid. Cornerbacks weren't getting paid. Now, next year, the market may change a little bit, and Breeland gets that 3-year, $24 million contract he left on the table with the Carolina Panthers. But I think it's clear that cornerbacks weren't going to get paid, so it was about finding the right situation for you. And the Chiefs, I think, pretty openly told you they were looking for a veteran corner. Brought in Darby. He went back to the Eagles on a 1-year deal. Interested in Dinar from the Cincinnati Bengals. He didn't end up signing. Rumor is he wants 10 per. Chiefs ain't paying that. So they went out and they got Bashaud Breeland. Now, again, a year too late. I certainly would have loved for them to bring in Breeland last year, but he's now in the fold for the Kansas City Chiefs. The next part of the plan has to be finding good defensive linemen and good pass rushers that fit what they want to do defensively. They didn't think Dee Ford fit defensively. Got him out of here. They didn't think Justin Houston fit defensively. Got him out of here. We haven't heard anything about Alan Bailey since the AFC Championship game. Show me a tweet. Show me a report. Show me anything about the Chiefs' interest in Alan Bailey. I think it's very safe to say he's not coming back and probably signing with the contender. That the next step, which is still a work in progress, and we'll see if they address that via free agency and picking up guys like Ndamukong Suh or Clay Matthews, or it's in the NFL draft, they still got to get pass rushers. I know we like this. Chiefs finished first in sacks, but the Patriots finished 30th in sacks. You still got to get pressure on the quarterback. It's not a shock to me that the Patriots led the NFL playoffs in sacks, had 10 sacks as opposed to their opponents, 1 sack during the playoffs, and made it to the Super Bowl and won the Super Bowl. Getting pressure on the quarterback is still a very important factor of winning NFL games. I don't know this, but this would be my hypothesis. My hypothesis would be if we looked up just the straight raw number of do you have more sacks than your opponent in an NFL game? I think we find out that the team that has more sacks wins 70% of games, 75% of games. But obviously, it's not the end-all be-all and numbers. No. Getting to the quarterback is still a very important facet of winning games. So I think their defensive plan is starting to come into focus. I think, one, it was go find a new leader for this defense, and they went and got it in Tyrann Mathieu. I think, two, it was we are not doing this Eric Berry song and dance again this year. We got to go in a different direction. So if that means eating $15 million, we're willing to do it. I thought it was pretty clear that they have targeted veteran cornerback play with Darby, Denard, and they brought in Bashaud Breeland. And next, they need to find pass rushers and guys that fit what they want to do defensively. D4 wasn't part of it. Justin Houston was a part of it. Alex Okafor, not really the pass rushing kind of guy. That is clearly the next big thing this defense needs to do.
I think there's one possible alternative here, CDOT, and I think it is this. I think it's possible the Chiefs believe that the pass defense can be fixed by upgrading the secondary as opposed to the pass rush, and the run defense is a problem that they had along the defensive line. And so if that's the case, it would make sense that with the pass defense, they're going after corners like Ronald Darby and now Bashaud Breeland. It makes sense that they go get Tyrann Mathieu and they tried to go get Earl Thomas. It makes sense that they believe that the run defense was a defensive line issue to let go of D4. Say that guy's not part of the solution to solve the run issues that we've had over the last few years. Instead, you bring in Alex Okafor. You sign this linebacker nobody knows who's going to play now, who played for the Cowboys last year.
First off, give him a name. His name is Damian Wilson. Give him a name. Don't give him the nobody somebody's heard of before. His name is Damian Wilson. He might be taking Reggie Ragland's job.
When he does, we'll go ahead and talk about him with his name. Pass defense might be a secondary issue. Run defense, a defensive line issue. I think that's another alternative as to how the Chiefs view those issues, CDOT.
Yeah, no, I don't agree. I don't disagree with you when it comes to there. And again, this defense had a lot of holes last year and a lot of things that they needed to answer. I actually don't really disagree with what their plan is so far. I would like for D4 to still be in the mix, and I still think he was the best available pass rusher that the Chiefs had or that was available in the NFL. And then when you factor in the contract that he got from the San Francisco 49ers, it does make you think. The Chiefs must have had no interest in that contract. If you really look at D4's contract, it is a one-year guaranteed deal. The same contract he was offered by the Kansas City Chiefs, even though San Francisco is spending more money in their 1 year than what Kansas City is. It cost San Francisco a draft pick to acquire that one-year contract. And then it is essentially 4 1-year team options for the San Francisco 49ers. I would have liked D4 back on that deal. I think it gives you a little bit of protection if D4 turns back into a pumpkin. It also incentivizes D4 to go out there and continue to play at a high level. You can't really sign a better contract for a guy who has the ceiling of D4. If it doesn't work this year, it costs you $20 million. It costs you a second-round draft pick. But if his back is completely messed up, you just move on from D4. So I think for the most part, the Chiefs' defensive plan has been perfectly fine. Let's see how they answer pass rushers. They probably still need one more corner, and I'm guessing one more big-time move is coming. But when it comes to seeing their plan, at least having an understanding of what they were trying to do, I think we have a much better understanding and focus of what that is. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll get back into the NCAA tournament. We have moved on from the conference tournament. That's over. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll get into the NCAA tournament, and K-State has the right to be pissed. Bill Self emphatically puts down the NBA rumors, and we're having a very important argument when it comes to the Jayhawks. I'll tell you what it is coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
Back in on The Drive, coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll get back into the Kansas City Chiefs as Earl Thomas said something very interesting to the Baltimore media that I think you in Kansas City will want to hear. Plus, Albert Breer said something in Monday Morning Quarterback on Sports Illustrated that kind of goes in line with what Earl Thomas said regarding the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll talk about that coming up in just a little bit. I still think the Chiefs are the biggest story in Kansas City, at least today. Once we get closer to the weekend and the tournament's here, obviously the tournament's the biggest deal in sports. I still think the Chiefs are a huge deal in their offseason moves and how close this team is to a Super Bowl and getting 3% better, 5% better. I think that's what the Chiefs are trying to do this offseason. I think their plan is starting to become more clear and more apparent as we see each free agency move. So I want to read to you guys what Bill Self had to say because we didn't get a chance to talk about this. We actually were going to talk about it, and then the Tyreek Hill news came down. It was a podcast where the guy, the host of the podcast, thinks that Bill Self is going to leave for the Chicago Bulls. Let me say this for those of you that are not big NBA fans. The Bulls stink. Like, absolutely stink. One of the 5 worst teams in the NBA. They do not have a young star on their team. The Bulls are going nowhere, and they're going to be going nowhere for like the next 4 or 5 years unless they get lucky and win the Zion Williamson lottery. That's where the Bulls sit. So my stance on this was going to be very simple. If Self needs to take the Bulls job, it tells you that trouble is coming for the NCAA. It was going to be very Pete Carroll-ish. It was going to be very let's get out before we have any kind of sanctions put on us by the NCAA. It's nothing wrong with going to the NBA, and I'm not saying Self will never go to the NBA, but when you've done as much as you've done in college basketball, as Bill Self has, when you have the job security that he has, when you have the platform that he has, if you're at the school that he is, you're not leaving that job for the Chicago Bulls. It's not like the Lakers, who are about to have a head coaching vacancy, called Bill Self and said, we want you to come coach LeBron. I could see him taking that job. That's a really good job to have, to be the coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. I mean this in all seriousness. The job he has right now is better than the Bulls' job. I know it's an NBA job. Being a head coach at Kansas with what he's done over the last 16 years is better than being the coach of this Bulls team. The Bulls stink. It would be one thing if he got asked to coach the Mavericks to have Luka Doncic. It'd be one thing if he got asked to coach the Hawks that got Trae Young. He's being asked to coach the Bulls, who best player is Zach LaVine. They're going nowhere. So, Self today talked to Sam Mellinger of the Kansas City Star, friend of the show, and put, quote, the Bulls thing is as far-fetched. I don't know where that came from. I've never talked to anybody from the Bulls about any employment opportunities. They have a coach, and I'm not a candidate for that position and will not be. He then also goes on and says, someone asked, are you 100% sure you'll be at Kansas next season? Quote, I don't think you can ever say that, because if they decide to go in a different direction, I guess I won't be. I think it's pretty safe to say that Kansas basketball is not going in a different direction than Bill Self. Quote, so I can't say 100%, but here's what I can say. I'm certainly not motivated at all to be anywhere else than right here, especially during these times. So he talks about these times. I think it's pretty clear what he's talking about. Quote, I wouldn't run from that at all. Not at all. And I'm looking forward to visiting with the NCAA and certainly reaching the conclusion of the investigation and seeing it through. You can quote that. Quote, my motivation is as strong as ever to be the coach at Kansas, to further this program, and to see the situation with the NCAA through, totally through. Never say never, but you don't know how both parties may feel. But that is my stance, and I'm looking forward to being here for a long time. I want to add something else, too. I said years ago I didn't know if I wanted to coach forever, but this past year has motivated me to remain in this business for a long time. I want it on record that I want to coach for a long time. You cannot emphatically deny NBA rumors much stronger than what Bill Self did. Now, obviously, things change. That tomorrow, if something happens with Greg Popovich in San Antonio and they call Bill Self, I think that's a job that he answers for. But I think he essentially told you, I would have to leave for not any situation, the perfect situation. And the Bulls situation ain't the perfect situation. I don't think any KU fan can fault him for taking the Los Angeles Lakers job or taking the Knicks job if something happened and they got Kevin Durant, Kyrie, and Zion Williamson. That's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to coach that team. But that's not the situation with the Bulls. So as a KU fan, I think you breathe a little bit easy, hear the words of Bill Self, know that he emphatically put these rumors to rest. So anybody talking on a podcast, they're talking out of their behinds. Bill Self's going to be the head coach of Kansas for a very long time. Let's get into the NCAA tournament. And KU fans, K-State fans, Missouri fans, college basketball fans, answer this question for me. Because I am the believer of, when you accomplish great things over the course of the regular season, you should be rewarded as such. I think the tournament should be built in a way that incentivizes you accomplishing things throughout the course of the regular season and then the conference tournament. So if you win a conference tournament over a team that maybe your resume is very similar, winning your conference tournament should give you that slight edge. If you win a conference regular season title, the way K-State just did, that should give you a little bit of an edge. Can anyone help me with this? What did winning the Big 12 regular season title get K-State? Because if you're looking at the way that the bracket has come together and the way that it's seeded, it's almost like K-State finished in third place. Look at it. Kansas got Kansas City, even though they were the third best team in the Big 12, and we'll talk about that. Texas Tech, they got placed in the Tulsa region. That would certainly be better for Kansas State than being shipped out to San Jose.
And a three seed. They got the better seed as well.
So Texas Tech got the better three seed, even though they tied with K-State. So I understand. I think Texas Tech, if you want to argue right now, especially given D-Wade, Texas Tech's better than them. But Texas Tech also lost in the Big 12 tournament to who they lose to, Brandon? West Virginia? Is that who they lost to? Sorry, CBI playing West Virginia, they lost to. So any slight edge that you maybe have, I can argue that that should be eliminated for the very simple fact of you lost to West Virginia at the end of the season, and they're terrible. What did winning the Big 12 get Kansas State? It didn't get you in Tulsa, which we agree would be the most favorable region for them to be placed in the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. Tulsa is 250 miles from Manhattan. San Jose is 1,700 miles away. If you're a K-State fan and you live in Kansas City or you live in Manhattan or you live in Overland Park, where would you much rather them play their games at? Which one are you more realistically hopping in your car to and then going to see them on Friday at 1 o'clock? You can hear that right here on 610 Sports Radio. Are you hopping in your car and driving to San Jose? Because that sounds miserable. I don't know about you guys, but I've driven west before. And when you go through, like once you get past Manhattan, it is a wasteland of driving. A complete wasteland.
The drive to Denver is the worst thing in the world.
So what did winning the Big 12 get K-State? It didn't get you the highest seed in the Big 12. That went to Texas Tech. It didn't get you a closer region in terms of the first and second round or the third and fourth round when it comes to KU and where they got placed. The committee seeded Kansas State like they were the third best team in the conference, even though they were tied for the first best team in the conference. If I'm Bruce Weber, I continue to bang the drum of chip on our shoulder. Look at what the committee did to us. They don't think you're as good as Texas Tech. They don't think you're as good as Kansas. We're always the underdog. Look at where we got placed. We got placed 6 hours from the team we're playing in the first round of the NCAA tournament at UC Irvine. Easy drive for them. It's not easy for us. It's never easy for us. The only people that believe in us are the guys in this locker room. That's what I'd be telling every single person that wants to listen to me if I'm Bruce Weber. I continue to play the Rodney Dangerfield no respect card, and it might work for him. I'm just looking at the way that the seeding broke down. I'm looking at the way that the tournament came together, and I'm just trying to figure out how winning the Big 12 helped Kansas State. It didn't help him at all. Hell, if anything, I would guess if you're K-State, you'd much rather be Iowa State. You'd much rather be a 6-seed with the opportunity to play in Kansas City if you looked at it. I just don't know how it helped them a whole lot, given what they accomplished throughout the course of the regular season. Moving on to Kansas. This is the argument that I've been seeing a lot on Twitter, and I've been participating in this, so I can't make it seem like everybody else is it. No one is denying that Kansas is a 4-seed. I'm not arguing it. I don't know who else is arguing it. I don't think KU should be a 5-seed or a 6-seed. I think the 4-seed was the appropriate seeding for them. But we all knew last night when we were watching the bracket selection show, and then you saw that they didn't get placed out west. And I think the South region was next in how the order in which they got released on the television show was. And then when it came to the Midwest region and you saw North Carolina was the 1-seed, I said right then and there, oh, it's obvious where Kansas is going. They're going to Kansas City. It was obvious where they were going. They will try to put Roy Williams against Kansas and Bill Self every single opportunity they have. It was clear what they were about to do. Roy goes back home to Kansas City to take on the Jayhawks. Like, come on now. We saw that coming. If you were watching that television show yesterday and the selection show, you saw that a mile away what they were about to do. I don't think that the pod system should be a reward for teams that are 4-seeds. The pod system, if you want to reward Kansas in the first round and the second round because they're the highest seed in that pod region, I got no issues with that. I think that's what the tournament should do. You're the 4-seed in this region, so if you want to place them in Tulsa, or you want to place them in Des Moines, you want to place them in a geographically advantaged place, I got absolutely no issues with that. But you shouldn't have the home court advantage in the Sweet 16 if you're a 4-seed. You shouldn't have the home court advantage in the third round of the NCAA tournament if you're a 6-seed like Iowa State. I'm all for Kansas City being cracking and Power and Light popping. But come on now. You got to protect the integrity, and you have to me, protect teams like North Carolina who deserve to have the advantage throughout the course of the regular season. And it's a little bit frustrating of how we evaluated Kansas is. The reason they got the highest 4-seed and the reason they got placed in Kansas City isn't real anymore. They went 12-1 with Udoka Azubuike. There's no denying that if Udoka was here, they'd be a much better team. And we're not having this argument because they're probably a 1 or a 2-seed because they've been that way since 2009. But that's not the case. They've gone 15-7 without Udoka Azubuike. They're an average basketball team. Average is strong. They're an above-average basketball team. The team that we currently watch is like a 6-seed, maybe a 7-seed. So I guess if they're making the argument of we'd be a 1-seed if we had Udoka, let's just put the difference and give them the highest 4, okay. But we all know the team that beat Tennessee, the team that beat Michigan State, the team that beat Marquette early in the season does not exist anymore. That's not the team I've been watching. The team I'm watching plays really well in Allen Fieldhouse and really struggles against anybody else.
They're kind of Iowa State. now, who is a sixth seed.
Yeah, now it might not end up mattering because they might lose in the second round. I'm not at the first round point with KU. I mean, I like to dance on the grave with KU. I'm not willing to say they're going to lose in the first round. But to me, the tournament made the all-important argument of body of work versus how they're playing now. Kansas's body of work is certainly a four seed. I don't know if they're the highest four seed, but their body of work is certainly a four seed. How they're playing right now, how they play without Udoka Azubuike, I don't think they should get the reward of playing at Sprint Center, which if you could pick any possible tournament location, that's the one you would pick for Kansas. Not Oklahoma City, not Omaha, not any place that can realistically host an NCAA tournament game. You would pick Sprint Center over all of those. Coming back up in a little bit, we'll get back into the Kansas City Chiefs as Earl Thomas is the one that got away. We'll explain it coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
Back in on The Drive, one more point really quickly on Kansas, and then we'll move on to talk about Earl Thomas as he is the one that got away. CDOT, K-State's non-con schedule was garbage, and they still lost four of those games. They lost to Tulsa and A&M. The four seed is their reward. There's no denying that Kansas State non-conference schedule leaves a lot to be desired. But I'm asking you, who had the better season? Very, very simple question. Let's remove this quadrant one wins and quadrant two wins and net rating. KU fans, who had the better season? Would you trade where you are to be where Kansas State is? Because I'm going to guess the answer is yes. That doesn't factor in all into this argument. Like, that has to factor in some, BK. Like, this right here, you can't deny it. K-State lost to Tulsa in a basketball game, which is embarrassing. And you lost to A&M, who just fired their coach. That happened. But at the end, when you sit here and you evaluate two teams that play in the exact same conference, that have the exact same schedule, it's not like the SEC where it's in balance. They play the same games against the same teams. Kansas State had a better schedule or had a better season than Kansas did. That has to be rewarded to me in the NCAA tournament, and I don't feel like that happened with K-State.
And even if you want to say, okay, but Kansas, their non-con schedule was so great, and what they did at the beginning of the year was so exceeding anything that K-State put together, what about Texas Tech? What's the argument there? I think Texas Tech is a better team than K-State, but K-State won the league. Their non-con schedules were remarkably similar in terms of where they ranked overall this year, comparatively speaking.
Plus, Texas Tech lost in the Big 12 tournament to West Virginia.
Right, and so that kind of offsets the Tulsa game. So I'm just having a hard time coming up with the explanation as to why K-State essentially got the third best of that group. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Let's move along. We'll talk a little bit about the Kansas City Chiefs here and Earl Thomas. So I don't know why, but my Monday routine over the last 3 weeks has been I wake up at like 8 o'clock in the morning, and for some reason, the first thing I do is I read Albert Breer and Peter King. Albert Breer wrote this. The Ravens, quote, moved the money they had earmarked for C.J. Mosley over to Earl Thomas and swooped in essentially to intercept the five-time All-Pro before he could land it with Kansas City. Kansas City had a one-year, $12 million deal on the table to pair Thomas with Tyrann Mathieu, which looked like it was going to get done. That's not breaking news. Now the $12 million deal was going to be a fully guaranteed deal. It was essentially going to be like they gave Earl Thomas the franchise tag because the franchise tag was around $11.5 million. It was essentially going to be like they didn't give D Ford the franchise tag and they just gave Earl Thomas the franchise tag. Perfectly fine with me. But then you listen to what Earl Thomas had to say when he talked to the Baltimore media of, I think we know Earl Thomas, not one to hold his tongue. He said that he thought he was going to sign with the Chiefs prior to Baltimore stepping in and signing him to that big-time deal, which everybody would have accepted.
So I thought I was going to go to Kansas City. Okay. On a 2-year deal, 1-year deal. And I was just going to bet on myself and hit the market again. And then my agents called me, David Mulugeta and Andrew Kessler. I talked to them on the phone, and they said that Baltimore has a mega deal for you. And I say, hell yeah. That's where I'm going.
I mean, I can't fault that of your Earl Thomas. You've already won a ring. You played in multiple Super Bowls. Certainly would have been nice to compete for another one, or certainly have a better chance to compete for one in Kansas City as opposed to Baltimore. Not that Baltimore is a bad team, but Kansas City's better than them. Let's just be honest here. But hey, I'm not going to fault you where I was going to take the 1-year, $12 million deal and bet on myself. And then the Ravens called and offered me $35 million guaranteed. And I was like, hell yeah, I'll take that deal. I'm not going to fault it at all. What I do think about this is it takes us a little bit inside the mind of Brett Veach. He was willing to swing big. If you're willing in free agency, I think we can agree there were three big-time premier safeties. Landon Collins was one of them, Tyrann Mathieu was one of them, and Earl Thomas was one of them. If you're willing in free agency to go out there and sign a multi-year deal to Tyrann Mathieu, essentially a two-year deal, I know it's a three, it's a two-year contract, and then you're willing to roll the dice and sign Earl Thomas, a player who we know you liked, who you wanted to go get at the trade deadline last year, if you were willing to sign Earl Thomas to a one-year, $12 million deal and just say, we'll figure it out, then we'll have Thomas play a more traditional safety role. We'll use Tyrann Mathieu in a jack-of-all-trade kind of roles. He'll play some safety, some corner, some linebacker, some DN. He can do a little bit of everything. That's going for it. That's the kind of outside-the-box thinking. That's the kind of aggressive thinking. That's the kind of all-in, we're trying to win a Super Bowl kind of move that I like. So I'm disappointed this didn't happen. On the one, Earl Thomas is probably a better player than Tyrann Mathieu. I think Earl Thomas has a chance to be in the Hall of Fame at some point. Now, we don't know how his body is going to respond to the broken leg, but if you're telling me Earl Thomas was about to come in here in Kansas City and play on a one-year, $12 million fully guaranteed deal that was going to be about the money and trying to win a ring, sign me up for another fully motivated, fully focused Earl Thomas that I think would have wanted to be in Kansas City given the chance they had to go. But, man, that's the kind of thinking, and I think it should encourage you as a Chiefs fan to know Veach still has one more of these moves left. If you were thinking about what I don't think any other team in the NFL was thinking, we got enough cap space to have Tyrann Mathieu and Earl Thomas. That tells me your mindset is where it needs to be radical and forward-thinking when it comes to building this defense.
I think you could have made a case at that point, C-Dot, the Chiefs in terms of impact defenders that were on the open market this offseason, they were trying to get the two most impactful. Tyrann Mathieu impacts the game in the run. He impacts the game against the pass. He can play basically anywhere on the field. And Earl Thomas, I think, was the best defensive player on the market this offseason. The Chiefs were trying to get both of them. So if they were going to improve the defense this offseason, that was the way to do it. Now, the question that I then have is, what's the backup plan? Okay, so you didn't get Earl Thomas. I think Ronald Darby was their first option. That's the guy they wanted to sign at corner.
I agree.
And I think that the medicals didn't check out. He wasn't maybe going to be ready by week one, and they decided, we're going to go Bashaud Breeland. That was our backup plan there. So the question that I'm going to be interested in finding out the answer to is, what's the backup plan to Earl Thomas? Because you can't replace what he was going to bring for you, but is it, okay, let's shift gears. Let's go try to get an impact defender on the D-line. Let's go get a linebacker that's going to be an impact defender. Or is it, we just need to go find another safety?
I don't know. I think it's very fair to say that they evaluate Earl Thomas maybe differently than they evaluate everybody. Like, I think they were willing to overspend at the trade deadline for Earl Thomas, given the kind of player that he is. If you're willing to sign Earl Thomas essentially to the franchise tag, because again, it was going to be a one-year, $12 million fully guaranteed kind of deal. And Therese once again said this was on the table if he hadn't come to Baltimore. This was the second time you missed out on Earl Thomas. You missed out the trade deadline. You missed out right here. They seem to really like Earl Thomas. Just something comes in. And again, you were never going to compete with Baltimore because there was no way this organization was giving them $35 million guaranteed. No way they were going to do that. There was no way they were going to do that. Man, you look at this deal. You look at the I just appreciate and like the logic behind it. We're going to take big swings here. We took a big swing with Tyrann Mathieu. We connected. We then followed up and then tried to take a big swing at Earl Thomas. We missed, but we still got the cap space to go out there and make those kind of moves. I just like what their thinking is. My biggest question now remaining for the Kansas City Chiefs is, where is the pass rush going to come from? Last year's Chiefs team had 52 sacks. They lost nearly 60% of those over the last month. No Justin Houston. No D Ford, no Alan Bailey. Don't think he's coming back. And Alan Bailey, I think, is an above-average defensive lineman. I like Alan Bailey a lot. I think every team needs an Alan Bailey, but they signed Alex Okafor. But I think Alan Bailey's better than Alex Okafor, if you ask me. The best pass rushers left on the market, not named Justin Houston. Now, maybe Justin Houston's coming back on a revised deal. Doubt it, strongly doubt it. Maybe he goes out there, plays the field, realize the market doesn't materialize the way that he wants to, a la Mike Moustakas, and ends up coming back to Kansas City. Again, doubt it, but he's still the best pass rusher out there on the market. The other names are Ndamukong Suh, Ziggy Ansah, and Clay Matthews. Now, we saw how Ndamukong Suh could play with an elite-level defensive tackle last year with Aaron Donald. Clay Matthews, I would like as an edge rusher. That's what they need to be thinking. I do think that the pass rush probably needs to come from a veteran. I don't know about you guys, but I continue. I'm not trusting Breeland Speaks in 2019. I'm not trusting Tano Passanio. Go get you a Clay Matthews. Go get you a Ndamukong Suh. Then you can depend on Breeland Speaks and Tano Passanio to develop and emerge. Go get you somebody in the draft, and then that's the answer. But similar to cornerback, how they couldn't just spend a first-round draft pick on Baker from Georgia, at least not in year one, or going to get Greedy Williams from LSU, you needed to go get you a veteran cornerback. I would say you need to do the exact same thing when it comes to pass rush. Put that $12 million you just missed out on Earl Thomas and go get Ndamukong Suh. Go get Clay Matthews to be an edge rusher, and that solves a lot of your problems. Is Clay Matthews Justin Houston? Is he D4? No. But I certainly think that Clay Matthews is certainly capable enough of getting to the quarterback and being an above-average pass rusher, which this team desperately needs. Again, they had 52 sacks last year. They lost nearly 60% of those. And hell, of the guys remaining on the team, Chris Jones had over half of the remaining sacks left on the team. You need to solidify the pass rush and find somebody else who can get you to where you were. Not saying you got to be number one in sacks again, but you got to at least be able to generate some kind of pass rush. And they don't have a lot of guys consistently on the roster that I think can do that. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll all take a minute, presented by Smitty's Garage Burgers and Beers, and CBS finally got it right. Hallelujah. We'll talk about it next. Coming up, it's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
Let's go.
Give me a minute.
You are officially on the clock.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll give you a chance to win a KC MVP golf card in the pop quiz, which is presented by Victory Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. We'll also talk a little college basketball coming up here in just a little bit. A lot of stuff is happening. We'll get back into the Chiefs coming up in just a little bit. It's going to be a nice balancing act over the next 4 or 5 days or so between the Kansas City Chiefs, who I still think are the top story in Kansas City, and the NCAA tournament, which is the biggest sporting event, at least of the spring. I think it's pretty safe to say it's the biggest sporting event of the spring. So we'll be bouncing back and forth between that over the next couple of days. Give us a minute. It's presented by Smitty's Garage Burgers and Beers. BK, hit me. So this is one of the K-State games that I went to because, you know, I'm a K-State fan. So, a K-State fan, I believe his name is Cameron Kroger, I believe that's how he pronounced his name. They do one of those, like, shooting contests during it, and he hit a three, right? So, he won 52 free Qdoba burritos. And then, right afterwards, he was putting on Twitter, he was like, I don't really like Mexican food. If one person, or he's like, I'll randomly give this away to someone that likes this tweet. He decided to do something better. He is studying food insecurity in class at Kansas State. So he has decided to donate the food to a local shelter in Manhattan. So Qdoba, noticing his good gesture, have also made a good gesture, and they have doubled the amount. So now it is going to be 104 meals to a local food shelter. Salute to you, Cameron. You used your platform for good. And even though I don't know how you don't like Mexican food, who doesn't like meat, rice, lettuce, sour cream, corn, cheese. I don't know how you don't like that. Let's not make it seem like Qdoba's out here having authentic Mexican food. I don't know what college student doesn't like Qdoba or Chipotle, but neither here nor there. Salute to you for your really nice gesture, giving 104 meals to a local food shelter in Manhattan. That
is
my minute
for the
day. If I were
to eat one food for the rest of my life every day, like I had to eat it every day for dinner, Mexican 100% would be the number one pick.
I mean, I love Mexican food. I just don't understand of how you don't like Mexican food. Again, you're 19, 20 years old. You don't like Qdoba? You don't like Chipotle? You don't like Freebirds? You don't like either one of those options? But hey, you had the opportunity. You could have used that with the young ladies in college. Can you imagine if you were back in school and you could tell some girl, I have 52 free meals at Qdoba?
I feel like that goes over well.
Incredibly well. So hey, the fact that you gave it away and didn't receive anything for it, I give you a lot of credit, man. Salute.
All right, Steve, I know we don't love talking NBA basketball here on this show.
I mean, the only time this week we talk NBA basketball on this show.
That's 100% accurate. In the last 2.5 weeks, I've noticed a little something. The Warriors look a little more vulnerable than they have in the past. They've lost to the Suns, the Magic, the Heat. At the same time, the Rockets have won 11 to 12.
You're falling for this?
Giannis playing at a legitimate MVP type of level. The Sixers have all the top-end talent. I don't believe in them, but they have the top-end talent to be able to do something. At their peak, the Thunder looks like a legitimate title contender. As I look around the NBA, C-Dot, this is the first year that I actually feel like anybody else has a chance to knock off the Golden State Warriors. Maybe I should put it this way. It's the first year that I feel like multiple teams have a chance to knock off the Warriors. Because last year, the Rockets were close. This year, I actually think there's a few teams that can make a case. And the Warriors just don't feel right this year. They're only a game ahead of the Nuggets in the Western Conference. I don't think the Nuggets are a threat to them, but they just haven't had the same vibe about them this year. So my minute today, I think the Warriors are a little bit more vulnerable than maybe we're giving them credit for.
You really decided the day after the NCAA tournament bracket is out.
I feel like this was the best place to talk about the NBA.
To tell us that you think the team that has won three of the last four, the team that by far has the best roster in the NBA, now you're willing to jump on the limb for the Denver Nuggets. Now you're willing to jump on the limb for the...
I didn't say that the Nuggets had a shot.
Philadelphia 76ers.
I didn't say that either.
Okay, my bad.
Give me the Rockets. Give me the Bucks. Give me the Raptors. Maybe the Celtics are able to get it together. I don't know.
Maybe the Celtics get it together. Okay.
I think there's like three teams that have a legitimate shot.
Okay. All right. Let me rally this thing back together and hit the real basketball music we should be playing during this time. You guys will not believe this. CBS has a gold mine. They control the NCAA tournament. I saw one tweet. They make $143,000 per game for the NCAA tournament. Per game. That's what Turner makes. Think about this. For the last 2 years, they've messed up the selection show. Last year, they really decided to show us all the teams in alphabetical order. Not just region by region, not seed by seed. They thought that we wanted a Excel document when it came to the NCAA tournament.
Oh, they passed K-State. Guess they're not making it this year.
A couple of years ago, the bracket show was supposed to be 2 hours long. It got scooped on Twitter, and then they had to just speed through it. Like, they were taking 45 minutes to show us one region. Terrible idea. They finally got it right. Shockingly enough, America just wanted the information when it came to the selection show. I don't know how this was so hard. It was incredibly easy. Bracket, quick analysis, commercial break. Bracket, quick analysis, commercial break. If in the meantime you want to show us you going to Buffalo so we can see the kids cheer when they're on TV, or show Michigan who just won the Big Ten, hey, I got no issue with that. That's what you should be doing. But we're going to get 4 days of breakdown. We don't need it right here. CBS. Bracket. Quick analysis. Commercial break. Repeat process. That's it.
It took like 20 minutes yesterday to get through the whole bracket.
It was great. I loved it. CBS. Doing a bang-up job here. Bang-up job.
It just feels easy. You know, like, there's one thing that all of us can get behind, and it's that the tournament's great. We love the tournament. We love brackets. We love gambling. We love watching basketball throughout the course of a regular workday. The tournament's great. All you have to do is announce it. We can do the rest.
So, that concludes our bonus minute when it comes to the CBS and the selection show yesterday. They got a good rating yesterday. Now, you can't complain for what it is. I mean, it's not much happening during it, you know? It is basically the college basketball draft. That's what it is. Like, it is the college basketball equivalent of the draft. It's a really fun non-sports event that we all love and that we all watch and that we all follow. I only have two slight issues with the bracket this year. I think the potting system is a little bit off this year. Like, Tennessee as the 2 seed should not potentially be playing Cincinnati in Columbus, Ohio. That should not be their reward for being the 2 seed in the NCAA tournament. Iowa State, who is a six seed, should not be playing games in Kansas City, Missouri, who we agree that's, I don't know when it happened. Maybe it's always been this way. It is basically Hilton South. Maybe it was like this in the Big 8 days and I just hadn't started paying attention to, or maybe it was something that happened with Fred Hoiberg. Iowa State runs the Big 12. They run Kansas City. KU fans, you should be a little bit embarrassed that the team from 3.5 hours away just comes down here and just takes over your city. I keep hearing it's called Kansas City for a reason. No, it's basically Iowa City. Whenever they have the Big 12 tournament for 3 days, it is Iowa City, Missouri. That's what we should start calling Kansas City whenever the Iowa State comes to town. So I think they got that wrong, and I will continue to bang this drum and stand on this soapbox for as long as I live. How do teams like Oklahoma make the NCAA tournament, PK? Oklahoma went 7-11 in the Big 12. 7-11. That's not good. Not 9-9 like Iowa State did. They went 7-11. And then to double down, you know how they always talk about the bubble? You know that? Lenardi loves the bubble. Jerry Palm loves the bubble. Ken Palm loves the bubble. That's all we talk about, the last bubble, bubble, bubble. They then had a Big 12 tournament game. You know how they always say that they need one to win to get in and all that foolishness? Oklahoma lost in session one to West Virginia. Session one of the Big 12 in front of 37 people, they lost to West Virginia. You don't deserve to make the NCAA tournament. I'm telling you, I will continue to bang this drum. I will continue to be at the forefront. If you don't finish at 500 or above in your regular season conference and you're from a Power 5, Power 6 conference, you should have to win your conference tournament.
I just don't know who you wanted instead. Like, there just weren't a lot of good options this year. UNC Greensboro, you wanted them. They lost by 30 every time that they played Wofford.
You shouldn't be able to go 7-11 in the Big 12. 7-11.
But they did beat Wofford earlier this year by 10. Everybody loves Wofford.
And then lose in the conference tournament to West Virginia and then be as safely in the... They weren't even a first four team. They're not playing in Dayton. They were an 8 seed. They were comfortably... What did Oklahoma do to be comfortably in the tournament?
I mean, this bracket stinks, man. There's a lot of bad teams.
That's what
we learned. There's just a lot of really bad teams in college basketball.
And maybe this steps on the point I was just making for the last 2 minutes, but Dick Vitale, he was doing his like yearly, oh, woe is me for the little guy. If you didn't make this NCAA tournament field and you're from a major conference team, you have no one to blame but yourself. NC State, I don't want to hear it. Texas, I don't want to hear it. Indiana, TCU. I don't want to hear it. You were a bad basketball team if you couldn't make this year's NCAA tournament. This tournament stunk. The selection stinks. There are a lot of teams I'm going to cry for. I'm always going to side with the little guy because we love to tout the little guy when it comes to Cinderella and all that kind of stuff. We don't want to let him in. I just don't get how Oklahoma can go 7-11, lose to West Virginia, and still not even have to sweat when it comes to the NCAA tournament. That just seems off to me. Pop quiz.
Quiz. I'm sorry, but all questions must be submitted in writing.
The pop quiz is presented by Victory Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Today's pop quiz is a movie. The winner gets a KC MVP golf card. All you got to do is be called number 6 when you hear this movie.
Well, you're the swing man, Jimmy. You're solo right. All right, Merle should be open swinging around the end of that fence.
If you know what movie that is, be calling number 6 to 913-576-7610. Coming up in 2 minutes, the Niners don't view D Ford much differently than I do, but the Chiefs and I are completely different sides. I'll tell you what I mean. Coming up, it's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.